Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Own Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Today on the show, we have Dustin Burley, a candidate in the 53rd District in Anderson, Spencer, and Bullitt counties. He's a really interesting guy, and I was really happy to have him on. He talked a lot about what it's like running in a rural district. He talked about what it's like knocking doors in a rural district, doing the work out there. And he talked a lot about how some of the issues that are impacting his district and how he's kind of running on those. I was really happy to talk to him, so I'm excited to share that interview with you. But before that, we have plenty to talk about. Jasmine's talking about the JCPS school board and the school resource officers, the contract between those two groups. We also are going to talk about Real ID. JCPS is in another segment. JCPS and the Kentucky Board of Education have agreed to do something or other. We're not quite sure. We are also going to talk about Governor Bevin putting his foot in his mouth once again. And also, we have some stories about Marcy's Law. And guess what, Jasmine? We also have Quick Hits. Lots to get to. So, without any further ado, tell us about JCPS and law enforcement.
All right. So about 2 weeks ago, it broke that the JCPS school board was going to vote on a plan that would eliminate school resource officers, or SROs, as I'm going to call them, and replace them with officers hired by the district. And that would be a plan that would cost about $5 million.
Wow.
But there have definitely been issues with JCPS and contracted police officers that work in the schools. So the way this works now is JCPS has a contract with other law enforcement agencies.
Right, basically. And most of those would be like Louisville Metro PD, right?
Right. So in November 2017, a J-Town police officer tased a child at J-Town High School. I think that there's kind of been a small debate about SROs and JCPS brewing for a long time, but this kind of ignited it,
And I think that, you know, the fact that that was on tape, too, was a big deal.
Right. And so currently, there are 27 schools that have SROs that work for other law enforcement agencies. Most of them are LMPD, but there are also several from the Sheriff's Department and from other police departments, such as the J-Town Police Department.
Right.
A new plan would have full-time security officers that would be employed by JCPS under a newly created Division of School Security. So each high school and middle school would have one, and then they would also be responsible for two or three elementary schools.
Okay.
So many other big city school districts that are model school districts for JCPS have plans like this. Austin, Atlanta, other large cities are already doing stuff like this. And Superintendent Marty Polio has made statements about this, saying we're behind and we need to maybe do something else. At the board meeting on August 8th, they approved the SRO contract for the 2018-19 school year, which was expected. This is a new plan that would start in 2019, but they ended up pushing the vote for it until the next board meeting.
It
did not get voted on. You know, I don't know if this would be better than the current system, but I definitely like the idea of it. I think that putting police in schools criminalizes children, and I think that when you have actual police officers, there's also an instinct to charge criminally rather than using informal and other disciplinary methods.
Yeah, and you know a lot about this because you work with juveniles in the criminal justice system, a lot of whom are put their experience in school.
Right, exactly. The number of school cases is kind of outstanding. I mean, this is the thing. School policing became popular in the 90s after that kind of first wave of school shootings and because of an increase in federal funding for criminal justice, which that's the Clinton crime bill in 1994. School policing was most heavy and still is in low-income and black neighborhoods, even though most school shootings were occurring in majority white suburban areas. And school policing is just another piece of the justice system that disproportionately affects kids of colors. And I also think that it really affects kids with disabilities. Schools have limitations on disciplinary actions for children with disabilities, and a school has to take certain steps, sometimes extra steps, if a child's actions are deemed to be a manifestation of their disability, and that may keep them from being suspended, things like that. But it doesn't prevent an SRO from charging them with a crime.
Oh,
and
wow.
I think that's a police officer's instinct. Like, we can't suspend them because of their disability, but we could still charge them.
So they put all these protections in place to, like, try to keep you from exercising discipline on kids with disabilities to ensure that, you know, you're not discriminating against them.
Right.
But those safeguards aren't there, so instead of, like, having an in-school type disciplinary action, they just skip all that and go straight to the cops.
Well, they have to take all of those steps and review things when it's a child with a disability. But even with all those protections, it doesn't prevent an officer from charging them. So they may not have the in-school discipline that another child may have, but they could still be criminally charged and have to go to court
for it.
And I think that with SROs versus security hired by the district, I think that you have more arrests in schools.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. So the hired JCPS officers, if this plan does get put in place, would still have arresting power. So that obviously wouldn't go away. But it's uncertain if they would carry guns. That's still something that the district is looking at. But I definitely think that a change from officers from a police department to in-house officers would reduce the number of arrests. And I think it's definitely a plan worth looking at, and hopefully it'll be voted on in future board meetings.
Let me ask you this real quick. The SROs that are contracted from police departments, are they only an SRO? Like, are you just the SRO, or do you also have to have other duties? Like, during the day, you're working at a school, but, like, you might also go out on patrol at night or something.
They would not go out and patrol at night. Okay. I'm not sure about other, like, administrative duties, things like that, but they work at the school.
Okay.
But they do perform investigations that might take them outside of the school for school-related cases.
Yeah, and I think also, like, if you have a police department, their job is to solve, to arrest people and to, solve crimes or whatever.
Right.
Like, having a different focus being there at school about discipline and not resorting to arrest.
Discipline and safety.
Yeah, having that be more central to the operations is important. All right, Jasmine, you've got the next topic. Do tell us about Real ID.
All right. If you are a longtime listener of my Old Kentucky podcast, this was one of our very early stories. So Real ID is a federal law that was passed in 2005 to upgrade the security of driver's licenses. This was a federal law that was kind of passed in the wake of 9/11 to upgrade security. 13 years later, here we are. Kentucky becomes one of the last states to comply with the law after several extensions and a vetoed bill by the governor in his first session. And it wasn't just the governor. There were a lot of state leaders who didn't want the feds to regulate driver's licenses.
It was like the ACLU plus Governor Bevin, which is like an interesting pairing.
Right. Finally, when the federal government was like, you're not going to be able to board airplanes or go to federal court, they were like, okay, I guess we have to get in compliance with this. It's not going away. So, beginning in January, Kentuckians can get their compliant driver's licenses. So people will have the option to get a standard license or a travel ID. You can drive, vote, and apply for benefits with either, but only the travel ID will allow you to fly or enter military bases.
And,
to
federal court and stuff like that.
So the travel ID is the compliant one. But prices are going up. Right now, an ID costs $20, but the new standard license will cost $43, and the traveler ID will cost $48. But they last 8 years instead of four, so the price increase is small.
On a per-year basis.
Right.
Got
but it that seems a lot to go, like, shell out for an ID.
Yeah, so don't lose it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The designs are going to be new, and but they're going to look alike. The only difference between the two will be a black star on your travel ID.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Where you get them is going to also be changing. Right now, you get licenses through the circuit court clerk's offices, but an outside vendor called Ademia will be issuing the new licenses. So starting in January, you can get your new ID, and
it's going to have to be mailed
to
you. Yeah.
Right. You get a temporary one, and then they mail you the permanent one.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jasmine, we're going to talk about JCPS and the Kentucky Board of Education, of course, because that's the big story this year. There was news that broke yesterday that JCPS had, quote, responded to the settlement offer, unquote, from the Kentucky Board of Education. I said yesterday. Today's the 15th, so on August the 14th. Okay, that's when that happened. However, no details have been released about what their response was. So just as a reminder, what they're responding to, the Kentucky Board of Education wants to take over JCPS, the Jefferson County Public Schools, but they offered a settlement, which the Courier-Journal reported included having the state having, quote, enhanced oversight over 8 points, which were central to an audit completed by the Kentucky Board of Education. So, Jasmine, Doug Prophet of WHAS in Louisville, he interviewed JCPS Superintendent Marty Polio on the 14th last night. He confirmed that the state Board of Education and JCPS were in negotiations. He also confirmed that one of the major sticking points was the student assignment plan.
Which is what we thought it would be.
Yeah, absolutely. So according to Insider Louisville, State Education Commissioner Wayne Lewis wants to present the JCPS proposal during a special meeting of the State Board of Education on September the 5th. So that's in a couple of weeks. And it's likely that if no settlement can be reached by then, the hearings will actually occur. They'll actually have to go to Frankfurt, the administrative judge that they had put in place. That will all happen if there is no settlement reached by September the 5th. So, Jasmine, we've both said this before. I think we're kind of on the same page on this. There are several items in that statewide audit that do indeed necessitate some further assistance from the State Board of Education for JCPS. There's really bad stuff about student safety. You know,
the use of restraints was one of the really big ones.
That was a huge one, yeah. But the student assignment plan being included in that was absolutely a no-go. Like, we do not trust, or at least I don't. I think you probably agree. I do not trust Wayne Lewis, and I do not trust the state government to take control of Louisville student assignment plan. So it seems like these are indeed the battle lines that are being drawn, and we'll see if somebody gives. If Wayne Lewis is able to say, okay, the other things I'm actually care enough about. I'm actually care enough about getting the student restraint stuff, getting some of these safety issues in place, and getting them changed, that I'm willing to give up on the student assignment plan. If he's willing to do that and probably face the ire of a lot of Republicans in Congress and probably Governor Bevin, I think that we can see a settlement. I don't think Marty Polio is going to blink on the student assignment plan being part of the enhanced oversight or having the state have control over the SAP. So I think that that's probably the lines that are drawn. We don't know. We're not privy to the negotiations, but that seems to be the way that it's going. Jasmine, yesterday morning, August the 14th, Governor Matt Bevin spoke to a Cincinnati radio station and had this to say about pension reforms. Quote, "I'm being fought, in some instances, by the very people that we're trying to save. It's like saving a drowning victim. It's like somebody, they're fighting you and pulling you under. You just need to knock them out and drag them to shore. It's for their own good, and we have to save the system," unquote.
Knocking people out.
Yeah, knocking people out, knocking out drowning victims. Jasmine, that's not great.
But not shocking.
No, yeah, it's absolutely par for the course for Matt Bevin. So, Jasmine, I thought we could take a minute here and we could rank some of the recent Matt Bevin statements from what I'm calling worse to worst. Okay, so the first one is, we'll just go with that one, the knocking out the drowning victims. That's the first one. The second one is this one, quote, "I guarantee you, somewhere in Kentucky today, a child was sexually assaulted that was left at home because there was nobody there to watch them. I guarantee you, somewhere today, a child was physically harmed or ingested poison because they were left alone because a single parent didn't have any money to take care of them," unquote. That was, of course, on the steps of the Capitol in the waning days of the session when he said, when the teachers were all there protesting and they called off school in almost all the districts, and he said that because of that, children died. Okay,
right.
Third quote. "I'm going to go in and meet with the members of the West Louisville Chess Club. Not something you necessarily would have thought of when you think of this section of town," unquote. So this was him in a video on YouTube where he said that black children from the West End don't play chess. Why he said that, you can probably guess. Okay, that's the third one. And then, quote, "How do you possibly make progress with people who either clearly don't understand what's being said to them or don't care? So guys like Joe Bowen literally has a business he used to own being picketed every week and on weekends by people picketing his business and telling people not to shop there and not to go there and to call and harass his employees simply because he's trying to save the state's pension plan system. That's the kind of thug mentality that's being dealt with." So that was Matt Bevin calling teachers thugs. So Jasmine, there are four options here. Which is the worst?
Okay, I have a top two worst that I think are 1A and 1B.
Okay.
And I think that those are the one where he says that children are getting sexually assaulted or poisoned when they're not in school, and the West Louisville Chess Club.
Yeah.
Those are the two worst to me. One of them clearly is implied racism.
Right.
And the other one is just like so outlandish that it's bad.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think they're all really bad. I think they're all really bad, and I think the implied racism is quite bad. But I would have said that, you know, these analogies that he draws are for some reason like more offensive to me because it seems like he's actually thought about them. I think that like all white people basically have some sort of like implied racism, and like it takes a lot of processing to like get to the point where you like understand that about yourself and like can deal with it. Maybe, some of these analogies, it's like clear that he's like thought through it and thinks that
more
this is
calculated.
A good idea. Yeah, it's not like something he said off the cuff, which is bad and didn't learn from, which that's also really bad. I think that, you know, the drowning victim thing is just so crazy. Like, what are you thinking when you think that this is an appropriate thing to say about
right.
people?
Right. So I'd go sexual assault in West Louisville Chess Club 1A and 1B, and then drowning victim 2. And
then
the thug mentality last.
Yeah, the thug mentality.
That one's bad. It's almost, but calling teachers thugs is...
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit more off the cuff, I think, too. That was like just something he threw in at the end of a thought. Also really bad, though. Don't do that. If you're the governor, don't say things off the cuff if you're given to this sort of behavior, which it's clear that Matt Bevin is. So you, okay, I can go with that. I can go with the children being poisoned is the worst, the West Louisville Chess Club 2. Then we want to say the drowning victims 3 and the thug mentality 4. Jasmine, they're all really bad.
All bad.
Yeah, so, but I think that's where we're going to end up with that. Okay, Jasmine, tell us about the defense lawyers suing to block Marcy's law.
All right, so as most of you already know, because I've been talking about it forever, Marcy's law, the Crime Victims Bill of Rights, passed in January 2018, but it's a constitutional amendment, so it has to be voted on in November.
Right.
In June, we told you that there were a group of defense attorneys planning to file a lawsuit to try to block it from being on the ballot, with the main argument being that the ballot question is too vague and doesn't adequately represent what the bill would actually do. Then there was also kind of an equal protection argument, which is basically that low-income victims wouldn't have the same privileges offered by the law
right.
as victims with more money that could hire private attorneys and things like that.
Right.
So,
but that was just a plan to file.
That was a plan to file a right. lawsuit, and the Kentucky Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers president gave a statement about it, and those were the arguments that he was talking about. So that was back in June, and that lawsuit has now been filed by the Kentucky Association for Criminal Defense Lawyers. So the suit names the Secretary of State's office and the Board of Elections as the defendants, because they will be the ones putting it on the ballot.
Right, right.
So they're arguing that because this is a constitutional amendment, it would alter every other constitutional provision to which it's related and would erode the presumption of innocence. We have amendments in the Constitution that are to protect the accused, and this erodes those.
Right, right.
They're also making the vagueness argument. They're really also challenging the whole process of getting an amendment on the ballot.
Okay. Wow, okay.
And that's why the Secretary of State's office and the Board of Elections are being named as the defendants. The KACDL's attorney that's filed the suit is J. David Niehaus, who has argued and won at the Supreme Court of the United States. Batson versus Kentucky is a case that made you cannot strike jurors on the basis of race.
Right, yeah.
And if you listen to Radiolab, he's been on Radiolab
oh,
talking
cool.
about that case on the podcast More Perfect.
Yeah, right. Cool.
So he's their attorney. He's a great attorney. I don't know if they'll win this lawsuit, but that's now been filed, and they're making several arguments, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. They're challenging the whole process of getting an amendment on the ballot, because that's kind of been used for decades in Kentucky. And if they win that, it could kind of change it sounds like.
Possibly.
Yeah, so we'll see. All right, Jasmine, before we go to our interview with Dustin Burley, we have some quick hits. Okay, first of all, Skokie invalidated Judge Shepard's ruling allowing Karen Faulkner to stand for election for judge after the death of Danny Alvarez. So Tanisha Hickerson will now win that seat. Skokie did not release an opinion, but we are definitely going to do a segment on that when they do.
Right, I'm really interested to see the grounds on which they ruled.
Right, you know, that kind of sucks for her. I know that it was like three really good people running for that judgeship in Louisville. I know you probably don't want to talk about it because you could potentially go in front of them, but I like all three of them. All right, so a second quick hit. Matt Bevin sat down with Donald Trump to talk about prison reform. So this was kind of in the news this week. Both of these men, both Donald Trump and Matt Bevin, have spoke about prison reform and criminal justice reform before. Jasmine, just as a reminder, in Kentucky, the prison population topped 25,000 for the first time ever this year. And we generated a budget surplus because the economy is going so well and there's more money now. And we are going to have to spend that in part on the rising prison population. So maybe a little bit of your actions speak louder than your words.
Mm-hmm.
So, All right, let's get to our interview with Dustin Burley.
Dustin Burley is the Democratic candidate for the 53rd House District, which covers Anderson County, Spencer County, as well as a part of Bullitt County. For those less familiar with Kentucky geography, this is kind of the area between Louisville and Frankfort, slightly south of I-64. Mr. Burley is a child care worker by trade and is facing two-term incumbent Representative James Tipton. Mr. Tipton has faced candidates in each of his first two races, earning 57% of the vote in 2014 and 72% in 2016. Mr. Burley is a significantly different candidate than Mr. Tipton's other opponents in that he is a gay African-American man under the age of 40. Dustin Burley, welcome to My Old Kentucky Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so candidate recruitment was a big deal last winter, and I think Democrats did a pretty impressive job finding folks to run in nearly every district. However, it didn't seem like many folks in the party were working very hard to recruit somebody in the 53rd district, so it's great that you decided to step up and run for the office. So can you tell us a little bit why you decided to jump into the race?
Well, I thought about running for judge executive first, and then after I really thought about it, December the 1st, the state took over child care assistance. And December the 2nd, we had denial letters for parents. Mm-hmm. So that means that they lost their child care assistant. And one of them came in because it was a Saturday. On Monday, we told her and she broke down in tears. Hmm. And she's like, what am I going to do? She's like, I can't quit my job and I can't pay for daycare. And so I thought about it and I looked at the race and I was like, well, there's never been a child care worker ever elected. Hmm. And then I looked at the calculus of all the teachers and, you know, all that good stuff. Now I'm super excited. But at the end of the day, they start off with people like me. Mm-hmm. And if you don't educate them and if you don't groom them right, they will never be ready for school. Mm-hmm. So it's a different type of voice and a different person to look at different aspects of life than, you know, your normal elected politician.
So, like you said, you are a lot different than many of the candidates who have run for state legislature in Kentucky in the past. But on the campaign trail, you seem to be talking about, you know, many of the same issues that other Democrats are talking about, the pension, opposition to charter schools, tax reform, and the like. Tell us how you strike the balance between being a barrier-breaking candidate and also running on issues that are important to your community.
I have found out that when I ran for magistrate, a guy didn't, he voted against me because I didn't knock on his door. Because I knocked on his neighbor's door because I used Vote Builder. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at it, with all these candidates, there's not a lot of money to go around this election cycle. So I was like, well, you know what? We'll go old school. And I have knocked on literally every door on every street I hit.
Wow.
And I don't ask what party because it's definitely not important to me. And with that, we talk about issues all the time. I've had two no's, and this is knocking in the rural area.
Right.
And the biggest thing that hit me when I met one guy, and he was like, you know what? The reason why I'm still registered Democrat, because I don't feel like changing my registration, but he's like, you know, the party left me a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And then the guy right next door to him is like, you know what? Us rural people are always left behind. It's kind of upsetting that not only did they say that, but when you go to certain people's doors, a guy's like, I bought a house here 18 years ago, and you're the second person that ever knocked on my door. Mm-hmm. Or I haven't seen a candidate in a decade for any office. And it's sad that we don't reach out to voters, period. So I think going old school, not only have I met a lot more people, but you never know what you're going to get when you come up to the door.
Well, let me ask you this question as a follow-up to that. So it's, you know, we've heard that before, and I've heard a lot of people say in the past that, like, the Democrats have left a lot of people behind. But typically when I hear people say that, they usually follow that up by saying the Democrats should be more moderate on issues of, like, race or sexual identity. And, of course, you know, you're Black and you're gay. Can you tell me a little bit about, like, you know, is that just misguided? Do you think that people just want to hear from you? Or, like, how does that all fit together in your mind?
Well, usually most people, especially out in the rural areas, they don't expect somebody Black to knock on their door. But it kind of cracks them up. And usually when some of them are like hesitant to open up the door, I'll be like, I'm a candidate. It's all good. And they just start laughing. And, you know, most of them, like they always say, it doesn't matter what color they are, what gender they are, as long as they do the right thing. And I said, well, with somebody who's not got, you know, the full support of the party, who's, you know, I could be that independent voice. I said, you know, if we flip this seat, which it is more than likely because it's an unpopular incumbent, even though he won in big margins, he is super unpopular because of the pension bill and higher ed stuff like that. Those people, you know, like I tell them, I could be that 51 vote, and because the party didn't fully support me, that doesn't mean I have to follow on what they say.
Right.
You know, I can actually get stuff done.
Right. That's so interesting. I like to hear that, though, that it's more to the people in your district, it's more about the person that you are instead of, you know, how you look or what you think about specific things. You know, that's really refreshing and nice to hear. Okay, so lots of our listeners are from more urban areas of the state and don't know much about Anderson and Spencer counties. Me personally, I've actually been there a lot. My grandfather owned a farm right outside of Mount Eden, like my whole childhood, so I was down in Anderson County like almost every weekend. So tell us what you think is so special about your district and what you like the most about your community.
Well, it's small town USA. I mean, when I knock on the door, the first thing that they ask is, what am I? Asking which party is it, what party am I? And then only one person has said no because I said I was a Democrat, but everybody else just looks at me and it's like, okay. Then they're like, well, Burley. I'm like, well, that's my dad's side. That's from Shelby County. And I said, my mom's side's been here all my life. And they're like, who are you related to? I'm like, the Pennies and the Harveys. And they're like, oh my God. So, you know, if my family has, I guess, you know, pretty much swayed most of the people that have knocked on, especially the older people. But I mean, we have two distilleries, so the Bourbon Trail is really popular. Mm-hmm. We just had the Bigfoot Festival this year, first time ever. I mean, we have a car show in Anderson County every 2 weeks. Spencer County has one, and there's tons of people there. I went to the Mount Washington Spring Festival my very first time, and people were super sweet there.
That is where I'm from.
For really?
Yep, I've been to many a Mount Washington Spring Festival. It's not really a big shebang, but it's
hey,
all right.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And then we have Taylorsville Lake in Spencer County.
Right.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff to do.
Yeah, don't forget the Lawrenceburg Chicken Swap. That's a real big deal.
Yeah, that used to be once upon a time ago.
Yeah.
So we think that fiscal issues are really important on this show. The last session of the General Assembly could tell you that the way the state approached fiscal issues like the budget and our pension system was a bit of a disaster. What are some ways that you hope to help improve the system as a state representative?
Well, somebody who will eventually swear in January, I will be the most, I guess, my income was $22,000 last year, and that was with overtime.
Wow.
So that's making $10 an hour working with kids. And when you mostly look at most of everybody's background, they make everybody makes more money than I do. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the whole tax reform package, all that affects people like me. So when you go talk to people at the door, they understand that, you know, that how if I have to go get my car fixed now, that's a extra tax. Or retirees just lost their $10,000 exemption, so now they're going to have to pay again tax on their income. I mean, people understand that struggle, and they don't realize that we keep on electing people who make extremely a lot of amount of money. They don't care about the people who are in the middle class and who's lower than them. I mean, because it's not their incomes that are getting affected the most. I mean, that's what's wrong with us electing people in the higher end instead of people in the lower end, and that's average people.
Absolutely. And you know, we've spoken to a lot of candidates about House Bill 29, which is a bill that was sponsored by Jim Wayne and many other Democrats that would increase revenue for our state and help to reform our tax system. Is that something you're interested in co-sponsoring if you're elected to Frankfort?
I think Jim Wayne is one of my faves. He has cracked me up for years. And, I mean, he knows his stuff. HB 29, which I'm upset that a lot of Democrats didn't even co-sponsor or make an effort to make another bill that was even better, or you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's the problem in Frankfurt, because nobody goes outside the box, and it's sad that we lost people like Jim Wayne who go outside the box and look for solutions. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then when I looked over it, because I actually looked it up, the only issue in the rural area is the tobacco tax mm-hmm. on cigarettes. You know, that's not good for a lot of our farmers and people in my district, because a lot of them do smoke, even though they understand it's a health hazard, they still smoke. And the estate tax, which a lot of people don't talk about, unless you're talking about rich people, but we have a lot of farmers that fall in that category.
Right.
So there's a lot of them that struggle to pay stuff like that, especially when you have corporations like Walmart who have messed over our dairy farmers this year mm-hmm. that nobody has brought up. And those families would have to pay that tax, and they can't afford to make ends meet as it is. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a little tweaking that could be done, but, I mean, I could support it. We just have to put a little more effort into it.
Right. And getting more people engaged that are legislators in the process of writing the bill and getting people from different parts of the state, because one of the things that was kind of sad to me about HB 29 was they were all urban Democrats. So they don't hear a lot about farmland, and they don't hear a lot about how like the estate tax falls on farmers and stuff like that. So it would be great if once you get there, if you could, you know, join that cadre of urban Democrats and kind of tell them what's up so that you can, you know, make some tweaks and make it better for everybody. So that's a good idea.
I agree, because, yeah. I mean, there's not too many rural Democrats, and the ones who are there, they don't speak up.
Right.
And that's what makes me mad. They sit on those back benches or the front benches, and you don't hear they don't say a word all session. Just like my opponent, he always spoke up during the pension bill because he offered it. Mm-hmm. Other than that, James just sits there like bump on the log and doesn't say anything. And people are so upset, and I'm like, well, you had to say rep that ain't done nothing. Well, I mean, what do you expect? And, I mean, that resonates with people because they're like, oh, or they'll be like, why am I road fit? Well, yell at your magistrate, your judge exec, and your state rep.
You mentioned farmers in your district. So your district does include a ton of farmland that grows exported crops and also includes one of the bigger distilleries in the state, both of which are industries that are caught up in the president's trade war. Do you think that this issue is going to be a factor in your race?
Of course, when you talk about people losing jobs and losing money out of their pocket, I mean, that economic issues always trumps anything. We haven't seen the effects of the tariffs yet because everybody that is not politically doesn't understand it. Tariffs take longer to take effect
mm-hmm.
than most stuff. Just like sanctions, they take a while. But when you have Wild Turkey and Four Roses, and they're in Anderson County, but I also have especially employees that live in Anderson, they go work at Wolford Reserve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's not in my district, but it's right outside of it. Jim Beam is right outside my district. They drive to Frankfort. I mean, you might have people from Mount Washington and Spencer County that drive into Louisville and work at those distilleries
mm-hmm.
or the ones in Shelby County. I mean, that is economic engine for not only my area, but for the state. And I mean, soybeans and corn, one of those big things that I have learned about, and they would be negatively impacted too. And like China says, you might not be able to get back in those markets after you're gone, talking about our farmers.
Right.
And I believe in this district, I have three state senators that touch this district for each county. And this county was super gerrymandered, so I have three congressional races that are in this district.
Wow.
So you have to have a person that is open-minded and willing to talk to anybody and has a thick skin, because you have six other people you have to work with to get things done.
Yeah, that's
what you have to do when you're a state legislator. Even though this district is tiny, I still need to get Gene Snyder expanded for people in Mount Washington and Taylorsville to get to work in Louisville.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I need to get BG Parkway expanded. And I have to work with all those elected officials, Republican or Democrat, to get things done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. I didn't even realize that your district covered so many congressional districts, but I guess that makes sense. So you have the sixth, of course, but which I think is most of it. But yeah, I guess
it's the Anderson County,
right?
And then Spencer has the southern part, and Bullitt are in the second, And then the mid to northern part of Spencer is in the 4th Congressional District.
Right. Wow. Yeah, that's impressive. but, you know, the 6th Congressional District is the one that we think is, you know, that's kind of the headline race of the entire election this year, I think, in Kentucky. And we've talked to a lot of people in Lexington about that race between Andy Barr and Amy McGrath. But, you know, one thing we're actually pretty interested in is the perspective from somebody in the 6th District from outside of the Fayette County. And that would be you. Look at you. You're from that area. Do you think Lieutenant Colonel McGrath's message is resonating with people in the more rural areas of the 6th District?
Well, she had over 200 people at her office opening in Anderson County, and I was there.
Wow.
And it was funny because when people started, you know, Kathy Carter showed up, and she's running against our former state rep, Kim King, in the 55th, and she was the Mercer. So she was there, and I was like, what are you doing? Because they're in the 2nd. And then there was people who were like, yeah, I'm from Harrisburg, and I'm supporting Amy. And I'm like, y'all have Hank in y'all's district. Like, why ain't y'all supporting Hank? And then when I go out here into what I call my favorite neck of the woods in the cut, and I'm knocking on doors, and I see Amy signs, I'm like, and then you hear people talking good / buyer's remorse about Trump, and I'm just like, it's interesting what people and their opinions are in the rural area. I mean, she has a chance. Andy's super scared because he's put up 5 or 6 signs in our county, and you see he's run 3 or 4 negative ads because he can't run on a record, and a lot of them don't show up. Amy showed up in the primary. I think that's what hurt her with, you know, that hurt Jim Gray and Reggie Thomas, because they didn't show up a lot, but she was here. She was here a lot. Between her and Jeff Young, they were here a lot. And Andy has actually tried to show up because he's been absent unless it's election year. Mm-hmm. And last time he didn't have to run because the Trump wave.
Mm-hmm. Right. You've talked a little bit about some farming issues, and we've talked about fiscal issues. Tell us about some other issues that are important to you. Any bills that you plan to file when you win your race?
Well, fairness ordinance is important to me because I had a principal in 2008 decided that he didn't like me too well because he found out I was gay. So they try to find every excuse in the book to get rid of me. And the one excuse they used was me being tardy because they were doing road work on US 60 in Shelby County back in the day. And there was 4 schools on that one strip because I was at East Middle School. And the funny part is, I'm a nurse, so I read the handbook. And there was no policy at that time that stated, hey, if you have a lot of tardies that you could get fired, and it wasn't in there. So they still went on with the proceeding. And still today, there's a lot of discrimination because even, like I try to explain to people, you can get fired for being gay. Or somebody can rent from somebody and they don't feel like, you know, they want you in their house, they can kick you out. Or if I go to a homeless shelter and they're like, you know what, based on our religious beliefs, we don't want you here. And I mean, we should have a statewide fairness ordinance, because if you step out of any of the 10 cities that are legal, you step out into their county, guess what? You have no leg to stand on out there.
Right. And plus, 10 isn't very many.
Right. And we have a lot of families that struggle, like my mom, because she was a single parent, and our uncle stayed with us when we were younger, so she didn't have to pay for a babysitter or child care. But a lot of people don't have those options. So those parents who are barely above that line and make a couple cents or a couple dollars over, we should expand child care assistance so that they can work and they can have a better job, because I would rather spend money on somebody working than somebody who's not. And in the rural area, you know, people would rather have a hand up instead of a handout.
Finally, how can people support your campaign?
Well, they can go to my website, DustinBurley.net. I mean, they can always donate. You can phone bank. You can knock on doors. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of things you can do. I mean, you can also, when you come knock on doors, I can teach you all about rural America, especially people in the city. Because the urban rural divide is horrible, not only in our state, but across the country. And we have to get to a place where we used to be, where we could balance both of those issues. So one area is not feeling like they're left out.
All right, Dustin Burley. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. We really enjoyed having you.
Anytime.
All right. Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter, at @myoldkypod. They can like our Facebook page and listen to our podcast on the podcasting app of their choice. They can also subscribe to our newsletter, which comes out weekly, and that's at tinyletter.com/myoldkentuckynewsletter. And finally, we have a Patreon where you can support our creation and sponsor us for as little as $1 a month, and that is patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast.
All right, everybody, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.